This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us once a week to talk about the latest growth and development updates going on here in Central Virginia. Brian, how are you?
Very well.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was excellent.
Y'all went down to the Danville region, right?
Family went down to the family farm in Danville.
Ride the four-wheeler?
We rode the four-wheelers.
Yeah.
We did the tractor ride with the hay and all the nieces and nephews, and went out and cut down a Christmas tree for one of my brothers-in-law.
Oh, sweet.
And
good,
that was fun.
Good. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. How was the food?
It was excellent. We had our Thanksgiving dinner here in Charlottesville, and then we went down the day after and spent the night down there.
Oh, good, good. And just played.
It's a lot of fun. Just played.
There you go. That
sounds good. Relaxed out in the countryside.
That sounds good. Brian, let's talk growth and development, and let's start with what I have always called my favorite road that probably will never exist, but boy, I wish there was money for it, because if we ever need this road, it's not the Meadow Creek Parkway. It's the Eastern Connector. It is the road that I think makes the most sense for this region, and it would basically take your car from the Pantops area to 29 North without ever going through Charlottesville. It would just be sort of a straight shot from Pantops up towards the airport. And boy, do we need that road.
That's right. And over the past couple years, there's been a steering committee working over the past year to figure out what's the best location for that road. So they've been studying various options. They've looked at 13 different possible places to put this road, some closer to Charlottesville. One area is around Penn Park, one area is around Polo Grounds Road, and one area is up around Prophet Road, so the furthest north. And they've whittled that down to three different potential options. Those are going to be shared with the public at community meetings tomorrow night and Thursday night. So Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at Baker Butler Elementary, the community can go to a public input session. It's not really a public hearing, but there'll be a brief presentation about the project. There'll be lots of displays up showing people where the road may go in the future and what the cost estimates are, and the public can provide feedback. There'll be another option Thursday night, 7 o'clock at the county office building, and that'll be out in the lobby on the second floor. So those are two real important meetings for people like you, Coy, that love this road.
Yeah.
you should go there and say that, or say, you know, this is a priority for me, or it's a priority for me that it go here and not there. But this is really the opportunity where they're asking for public input.
Yeah, yeah.
And the public has a chance to weigh in.
I've never been one to think that the Meadow Creek Parkway made much sense. It's never made much sense to me. It's right out of the mid-1960s planning vision. It's what's left of when you look at 5th Street extended from downtown out to the highway, that four lanes, that's what's left of it. It became the Meadow Creek Parkway, but that was supposed to be continued from 64 all the way up to 29, and that was the vision back in 1965. Meadow Creek Parkway's never made much sense to me. The Western Bypass actually makes sense to me, but I know that will never get built, but that makes a little bit of sense to me, that you could jump on the highway in up around the airport or further up and just get on a road and end up on 29 South without ever going around near Charlottesville. And for the same reason, I think the Eastern Connector makes a lot of sense. You know, you can get off the highway at Pantops, get on a road. Now, the problem is, if they make you go all the way down through the traffic light, at the bottom of the hill there, down near Freebridge, that's not going to solve anything. You need to be able to get on it back up near the highway, don't you?
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, will we just be moving that congestion to another point?
Yeah.
And there's certainly been a lot of development approved in Albemarle County just above 250 and 20, where that comes in. One of the big developments coming online is called Cascadia, and that's several hundred housing units up there.
Near the park? Near Darden
Across Tau? From Darden Tau Park.
Okay.
So more housing's coming in there. So that'll certainly add to it. But you're right. If that is viewed as you know, the place where this road will terminate, basically into 250.
Down at that big intersection.
By connecting to 20. And the question is, where will it connect to 20?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense if you funnel all that traffic into 20 right before it gets to that big intersection, because that intersection's already a mess.
There will certainly be improvements made there. You know, you bring up some of those other road projects, and a lot of these come down to money. And
don't say that.
Let me give you some numbers on the Eastern Connector. The cost estimates for the current options being looked at range from $34 million to $85 million for the Eastern Connector. That northern all of these routes are going to involve crossings over railroads, rivers, streams.
And that's where it gets really expensive.
And those bridges cost money.
Yeah.
Where's John Warner when you need him?
Right now, this money is not in place to build this road. We have funding to do this study and figure out where to put it and then start setting the community's expectations. But, you know, you mentioned the Meadow Creek Parkway, and certainly that one's taken a lot longer than anyone ever expected.
Oh, yeah.
And the Western Bypass, you know, is a $250 million-plus project, and the questions about that are, is that one in the right place? Some people call the Eastern Connector the Eastern Bypass. In that it will also have limited access, and if it takes the northern route, it will relocate, or basically they'll take the traffic currently on Profit Road, but they will build an entirely new road because they didn't want to run it through downtown historic Profit, which has a single lane bridge over the railroad tracks.
Yeah,
that was a historic community they were concerned about,
wanted
to protect, so they're moving it north of Profit, and so it would be building a whole new road.
Is that the most expensive route?
That's the most expensive route.
That's the one I want.
Well, actually, let me look. I'm looking at my notes here. Profit Road relocated, $44.5 million is what I've got for that one. Actually, Polo Grounds Road connector with a railroad underpass hit the top at $84.8 million.
What's the one that's most furthest out? Because that's the one that's going to make the most sense.
Furthest north is the Profit Road relocated.
Yeah. That would make the most sense, but not connect to 20. That doesn't make any sense that you would bring this road into 20. You got to keep it. If there's some way to bring it, of course, there's a mountain there. But
well, for people listening and trying to visualize this, SeavilleTomorrow.org, our website, on our blog, you can find some articles about the Eastern Connector. You can get some links to the Albemarle County information about the steering committee and their work. And I would definitely encourage the public to look at those maps, come to these public hearings, and let people know what you think about it.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Let's rejoin our conversation with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian joins us on Tuesday afternoons to give us an update on growth and development issues here in Central Virginia. So just to put a cap on that Eastern Connector thing, we basically just have enough money to sort of figure out where's the best place to put it. But the truth is, by the time we have the money, that may not be the best place anymore. I mean, that's the downside to this government planning business.
Well, you know, that is a tough nut to crack sometimes. And I think we're getting better as a community looking long term on some of these road projects. And I think, you know, the city and county should be commended for making some smart long term decisions. It is hard, though, to when the state isn't cooperating, funding transportation, we can have the best plans that think long term. You know, you take a small road project like Jarman's Gap out in Crozet. We've had a great plan for that. Now we're having to shrink it and shrink it and shrink it and make it not the greatest plan. Same thing with Georgetown Road.
Because there's no money.
Because there's less money than we expected. And because it's taking so long to accumulate the money, the inflation factor means it costs more.
Oh, yeah.
It's very problematic. And Georgetown Road's another example. We had big ideas about, bike lanes on both sides and pedestrian paths on both sides, and that's been scaled back because of funding concerns.
But you sort of need that on Georgetown Road because every single time I'm on that road, there's somebody biking and walking on it.
Right, and I think the current plan maybe has it on one side now and not on the other.
Oh, okay.
So they've had to scale it back.
And that's a road that serves a major high school.
That's
Albemarle High School's there, and there's a billion kids walking on that road.
And somebody wrote a letter to the editor that I thought was pretty good on that road and needing improvements. And I don't think they were fully aware of how high a priority that is for the county. But it's just, again, this funding gap means it just doesn't get started. Dennis Rooker represents that district. He is always talking about Georgetown Road at these meetings and asking where it is on the calendar, when's it going to get started. And it's very frustrating for our local decision.
So it's not a matter of commitment or will, it's just a matter of money. And for that, we look to Richmond because that's where our big dollar money comes from for big road projects.
That's right.
Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a comment or a question about any of these subjects. Brian, let's talk about water and drought. We still have all those water restrictions, and yet we're seeing a whole bunch of rain, aren't we?
We are. We're seeing some
rain. I know my dog's muddy.
We're seeing some rain. Some things are getting wet. But yesterday at the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority meeting, Tom Frederick, the executive director, gave what he called a sobering update to the board of directors. At the top of his list of concerns is the Sugar Hollow Reservoir. So up in the mountains above Whitehall on the border of Shenandoah National Park, Sugar Hollow is 12 feet below where it should be, full. And and it's a long story, but that Sugar Hollow, there's a pipeline built in 1925 that goes from Sugar Hollow to Ragged Mountain, fills another one of our reservoirs in the city. And they cut off that pipeline in November to start drawing down water from Ragged Mountain. When they had the pipeline cut off, it let them observe how much water was coming in to Sugar Hollow. And their predictions, they have a model that they used to predict that, was way off the mark. And what they found in reality was much less water was coming into Sugar Hollow than they expected.
And great.
And so the warning there is that even though we're seeing a little bit of rain, we're not seeing it necessarily in the right places or in the right quantity. So we had 4 inches of rain during an event in October, but apparently that didn't do anything measurable
really?
At Sugar Hollow. So
it's not raining at Sugar Hollow.
Well, that's what Tom Frederick basically said that. He said, you know, the wine growers around here are used to that idea of a microclimate area. And apparently, you know, just off the ridge of Shenandoah National Park, you know, maybe the watershed around Sugar Hollow didn't get the same rainfall. So his concern is that we will not have that reservoir refilled by next summer. If we don't make up this rain and that reservoir does not get filled, then we're heading into a summer. And if it's another summer like last summer.
So then we're heading into another drought without a time of replenishment.
Without a full reservoir. And that's their biggest concern.
And that's big. We've never been in that kind of position before. That's big time scary.
That's scary. Yep. So they're.
I mean, that's the real scary. That's circus scary.
And that's why they're leaving in place this drought warning and, you know, the public listening. I hope they will take seriously conservation measures that need to be in place.
So we could be on a drought warning for the foreseeable future.
We've not gone to the drought emergency stage yet. But yes, we've been in a drought warning for quite some time and it's going to continue for the foreseeable future.
And what is the Farmer's Almanac saying about winter? I mean, we can't really expect much snow. I sound like an old man when I say this, but it don't snow like it used to. We can't expect much snow here anymore. I mean, it hadn't really been snowing that much here in Virginia. It used to when we were kids.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I hear people talk about, you know, the snow melt factor, and I'm thinking, where are they from? You know, it's not like you look up at Shenandoah National Park and see the glaciers, you know, hanging up above Whitehall.
Well, it's been over 10 years now. What was it, the winter of 96 when we had that blizzard? We had a couple of feet, which just shut everything down for weeks.
That was pretty unusual.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun and very unusual. But, you know, we just don't see that kind of thing in here. So there really is no, we can't look at the winter snowmelt for any contribution to the reservoir.
Except from Wintergreen, but of course that only helps Nelson County. So. you know, you think about Monticello and, you know, Thomas Jefferson, and they pulled ice, you know, out of the Ravana River, put it up in the ice house at Monticello.
Yeah.
And when was the last time you could do that?
They used to do it up at the university too, where Mem Gym is now. You know that big field around Mem Gym, that was a big lake back in the 19th century, and that's where they got their ice and put it up in the ice house back in the little caves in the field, which is now Clemens Library. When would you ever think about doing that now?
So just another example of climate change, but clearly we've got other issues to deal with. And so anyway, on the water supply, people need to keep paying attention to those conservation requests and take care of this precious resource we have.
Let's rejoin our conversation with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville tomorrow. And you have some news that you're going to break right here that hasn't been in no newspaper, no radio, no TV has yet touched it.
I think it's only been on Charlottesville Tomorrow's blog at this point.
And you were telling me during the break, I'm shocked that nobody has picked this up because this could potentially be huge.
I think it's a big story.
It's a very big story.
This was the day before Thanksgiving. I was in a public meeting, no surprise, but spent about 2 hours with the Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Which, remind us what that is.
That is
the MPO.
The MPO is the entity that's allowed to prioritize transportation funding in our community. So it's got representatives from City Council. Kevin Lynch, Dave Norris are both representatives. And then the county has Supervisor David Slutsky, and Supervisor Dennis Rooker.
So it's Charlton to Albemarle.
That's right.
Working together to figure out, okay, this should be our number one road, or this should be the number one bridge. Or
that's right. So they come up with each locality has its own priority list. The MPO is the entity that can actually communicate that to the decision makers and coordinate sort of the federal funding and state funding.
So when and if this money ever shows up, then we'll have a priority list for spending.
So they had a big discussion about the Regional Transit Authority. This is something that the city and county have joined forces and said, hey, we can, you know, as Albemarle is getting more urban, we need to look at offering public transit out in Albemarle County. In our community, public transit today is delivered, of course, by the University of Virginia and Charlottesville Transit Service. And the county does make a financial contribution for some of the routes that come out into the county. But the county is clearly experiencing growth to the point where a lot of its customers out in the county want public transit. And when we talk about new communities like Biscuit Run, North Point, the supervisors are very much saying, hey, we need to get public transit into that community so we don't put the burden of all these cars on our road network.
Is the money that the county pays to the city for those routes of the city buses that come that serve parts of the county, is that in addition to the amount they pay in the revenue sharing agreement?
Yes,
it's on top of that?
That's in addition.
Okay.
The revenue sharing is free and clear, no strings attached. So the city can do with that whatever it wants. That's about $13 million.
And going up. Yeah.
So they got a report from their consultant, the MPO, on what are the options for creating the structure for this transit authority. And pretty soon we're going to be getting into all the details of the bylaws and cost sharing and a lot of those conversations that typically don't go too well in the city and the county. But this is one area where we are cooperating right now. And I think, you know, it's a very positive development. Right now, UVA is sitting on the sidelines saying, we don't want to be a part of that. We've got a system that works. Don't mess with us.
Yeah.
But they're at the table. They're listening. And they're sort of looking for the right opportunity to see if this really takes off. It is taking off. And the news from last week was they reached consensus on what structure they wanted. And it's called a legislatively enabled regional transit authority. What that means is they have to go to the General Assembly and get permission for this.
In a Dillon rule state, that's how you do it. You anything that you want to do, you pretty much have to get permission out of the General Assembly.
And one of the main reasons they need permission is they will have taxing authority.
Dun, dun, dun. So that's the big news
that no
one really knows about yet. The city and the county agreed they want to form a regional transit authority that has taxing capabilities.
The MPO has agreed on that. They will now take that and share that news with the City Council and Board of Supervisors and get their buy-in. There'll be future work sessions on this. So it's not a done deal, but the MPO has made that first decision that this is the direction we need to go.
That's the recommendation that they're going to be making.
And Dave Norris, up on our blog, you can read the story, but Dave Norris highlighted why he thought this was the right choice. He wanted two things. He wanted the ability for UVA to come and be involved in the future, and four of the other options didn't allow for that. Two options did, but only one option allowed for both UVA to join in the future and for them to raise new revenues. And so that's what they've settled in on.
So they basically picked a structure where there's a seat for UVA if they want it in this regional transit authority, and that they would have the ability to create a new tax
to
help pay for regional transportation projects. But people need to understand that they can't just form this group and then start taxing. Richmond has to give them permission to do it, just like Richmond gave Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads this past year permission to allow their transportation authorities to create new taxes.
And these things take time. David Slutsky, the supervisor from the Rio District in Albemarle, he wanted to move forward right away, you know, Delegate Toscano, Rob Bell, Creed Eads on the phone, and get something in the pipeline for this General Assembly session. And staff really said, listen, we have a lot more work to do before we're ready to give them all the details about this.
Yeah, yeah.
So they sort of tried to back off the decision makers and say it's probably more like 2009 that we'll go and seek this legislative authority.
And you can imagine there's going to be a lot of local groups or a lot of very vocal groups here locally on both sides of that issue.
I'm sure there will be. One of the things, it's not just UVA, but it's other counties surrounding us that could possibly join in the future. It's nonprofit organizations like Monticello, who have already expressed interest in working with this new regional transit authority to help move people up to the mountain to see Monticello and get them in and out more efficiently. So that's, I think it's exciting that the community is really coming together at this point. They've picked an approach, the structure. They still need to figure out things like equipment. Is this going to be bus rapid transit or is it just going to be more buses? Where are they going to go? Is it going to be a loop that includes places like Pantops, Biscuit Run, Hollymead Town Center? Or is it going to be, you know, more of a coming down 29 and then coming to UVA and then to downtown Charlottesville, sort of that L or J shape configuration? All that's still to be figured out. There'll be a big public input opportunity early in 2008.
There you go. Give us the update on what's going on at Fontaine Research Park. Then we'll take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk about all the new malls that are coming to Central Virginia.
I hope my friends in the Fry Springs area are listening, because a very important meeting tonight, even though they live in the city. Albemarle County's Planning Commission has a work session tonight on the Fontaine Research Park expansion. UVA is putting a request to add 6 new buildings, 3 parking garages, and a big component of this development is it's the site for the Fontaine Avenue Sunset Avenue connector. Fontaine Avenue Sunset Connector Road was talked about a lot during the Biscuit Run discussion, because people were asking, how are those people at Biscuit Run going to get to UVA and Fontaine Research Park? And right now they're coming up Old Lynchburg Road.
Yeah.
And so the residents there were very concerned about it. Tonight's an opportunity. It's a work session, but Marcia Joseph, the chair, allows for public comment during work sessions. So the public, again, has an opportunity to come weigh in on UVA's plans as well as the need for this road.
And a work session, as far as public meetings go, are really fascinating. No major decisions are made, but it's where you get to see all the models and all the maps, and you get to hear the planners talk about, well, this is why we're doing this, and you get to hear the applicant sort of talk about, make their case for, this is why we'd like this here. What's the most controversial thing, you think, in this whole, this new vision for the whole Fry Spring area?
Well, I think, you know, UVA has floated a trial balloon to have a new interchange put on I-64. And the staff commented on this in their staff report for tonight and said basically they didn't think that was very realistic given the current priorities. And VDOT, you know, if you ask them, they don't want I-64 used to help people get to work. They don't see it as the commuter road. Putting another interchange exit right near existing ones to them makes no sense at all.
Yeah, it would be, if you sort of picture it from above, it would be right next to the exit that already exists for 29.
That's right. And not far from 5th Street. You know, the folks out in Glenmore have long asked for another interchange closer to the Glenmore development on I-64, and those things are very difficult to come by. Certainly, Crozet has made arguments to have another one on Miller School Road.
Yeah.
And again, they just don't like putting them back to back next to existing ones. So that's one topic. I don't think that'll be a big issue tonight.
And that's tonight, Albemarle County Planning Commission.
That's right. The county office building, it starts at 6 o'clock.
Brian Wheeler is in studio here. We're talking growth and development here in Central Virginia. Brian Wheeler, of course, the executive director at Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. Brian, let's talk about all these new malls. There's a whole bunch of malls that are, some are, all you see is a sign on the road. Some other ones are partially built. Some other ones are just still woods and maybe a drawing somewhere. Let's start with the one that's probably more online than anything else, and that's Hollymead Town Center, which that's the new Target and the Harris Teeter and all that up there, which I've never, it has never made sense to me how they have everything sort of facing. It's like you go up there and it's like everything's facing the wrong way. You know, like I wouldn't have put it facing that way. Why did they do it like this? But anyway, they did it.
You know, the other thing, my reaction when I go in there is, well, it's a sea of parking in front of, you know, big box retail.
Yeah.
Which is one thing that, you know, I think we could do better. But also, but you've got those nice restaurants and shops, but the sidewalk, you know, is 3 feet wide.
Yeah.
And it's not a place that you want to hang out like the downtown mall, or that you'd, you know, what's the seafood restaurant there?
Bonefish Grill.
Bonefish Grill.
Yeah.
Nice restaurant. You know, imagine if they had sort of a downtown mall
cafe
kind of
seating.
Frontage
yeah.
out in front of that. And that would, and then you'd want to park there and stay there and shop. And I think that's Hallamy Town Center is an example of how we could have done it better. And my hope in with Charlotte Till Tomorrow is that sometime we can get some of those better ideas on the table. Not to say, you know, we shouldn't build it, but if we're going to build it, you know, it's private property, and if you're going to come forward with the development, let's try to make sure we get the best possible development we can.
And why didn't? Why isn't it better?
Well,
why isn't, for example, just the sidewalks are wider? I mean, why is it the way it is? Because I'm like you. I go there and I think, this isn't very pretty. This is sort of ugly. It's new, but it's sort of ugly.
I have not found the answer to that. But I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of paying attention to the details, like in these work sessions we were just talking about tonight at the Planning Commission. That's when you really need to raise your voice and say, and the planning commissioners need to do this and say, here's what our expectations are. Now, the developers push back and say, oh, but that's going to cost me money.
Yeah.
Or the developers say, that's not what my clients are looking for in a typical retail box. I think we should stick to a higher standard. And we do that when it comes to, the design of some buildings. You know, we've got some McDonald's restaurants on 29 that don't look like, you know, the ordinary McDonald's.
Right,
they're slightly
right.
better. The Chick-fil-A at Lowe's is, you know, better than maybe a traditional Chick-fil-A. But I think we can make improvements. But you have to start that conversation early. It's a balancing act with the developer. Certainly, if the developer buys into this and wants to do something better, that makes all the difference in the world.
And it really is about starting at the very beginning of the conversation and letting the developer know, look, this is one of the most, this is the place, one of the best places to live in America. We have very high standards.
I mean,
we're not just going to hand you everything on a platter and let you do whatever you want because you run in here with your hair on fire and say you need this yesterday.
I mean, your eyes might start rolling back if I start talking about sidewalk widths and street trees and curb and gutter and all those amenities. But those are the things that when you go there and experience it as a pedestrian or a shopper, that you really get a good sense for, and you don't even realize it probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, I encourage people to start looking for those things when they go to different shopping venues and what kind of experience do you have there, and compare, you know, some of our development here. And I think the county in particular is committed to doing it better, but that means we have to get into these details. And I think it also means encouraging our local developers who live here to do the right thing. And that was a neat experience I had traveling with Hunter Craig down to Chapel Hill, and we looked at some developments down there. And I, you know, he certainly came back with ideas that he could implement at Biscuit Run. And so I think it's things like that that we can do to help foster the conversation.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlotte Till Tomorrow, and the phone lines are open, 977-1070. Rick is on line one. Rick, you're on with Brian Wheeler. You go right ahead.
Hey, guys. If you can hear me well enough, I got the cell phone in the woods. You guys were talking about Hallamy Town Center. Two quick points. One, they have built that as a commercial development way before finishing any residential development, and I'm curious as to how that, what Brian thinks about that, because I was in there last night driving through the center to get to Harris Teeter, and at 5:30 at night, I drove by Five Guys Burgers, not a single customer, Quiznos, not a single customer, the ice cream place, no customers, Panera had three tables filled. And I'm just curious, it seems like that the decision to build that in the manner that they have has only hurt the folks who have invested their money to run these businesses. And I'm going to hang up and let you guys talk about
That's a fantastic point, isn't
it's
it?
It's great. Rick, you're absolutely right. I think it would have been better to phase in residential along with some of that commercial development. Now, recently, a lot of residential has been approved for Hallamy Town Center.
And they're going to build a whole bunch up back behind it, right?
Back behind it is a development called Abingdon Place. That's starting up.
Bunch of townhouses.
Townhouses back there. So it is coming, but Rick is right to point this out. And in fact, one of the planning commissioners, Dwayne Zobrist, when they were approving Hallamy Town Center, some of these other areas, he was basically panicked for these commercial property owners and saying, hey, we need to get this residential stuff in there ASAP and encourage this developer to build it because we don't have a good balance right now. That question of timing, I think, needs to be looked at in all these major developments when it's something this big. And the county, you know, missed an opportunity when they approved these original rezonings to put in place place that phasing schedule that says this much commercial and then this much residential.
Right, right, which you can do.
They did that at North Point. So yeah. North Point has sort of a phasing agreement. They can build this much retail with X number of houses.
And who is that, Wendell Wood? This is the developer for this whole area, right?
Wendell Wood was the original developer. It's, I think, been sold out to different entities at this point.
Yeah. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and we are out of time. So we'll pick up where next week where we left off and continue talking about malls that may or may not appear here in Central Virginia, new malls. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.